but Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, Reb Aaron is a gadol, Reb Shlomo Zalman is a gadol. How do you decide? Certainly I'm not the one. Reb Lichtenstein thinks what he thinks. Reb Avram Shapiro thinks what he thinks. I'm certainly not the one to decide. Obviously, if I would be in that situation, I would follow the opinion of the people from the Beis Medrash from which I stand. I came from as a student of Rav Soloveitchik, who thought that you should give up land if Pikuach Nefesh was involved. I come from the Beis Medrash of Rav Soloveitchik, who thinks that the army, the government, is the one who should make that decision. I come from the Beis Medrash of Rav Lichtenstein, who feels very strongly that under the present circumstances, a person must obey orders. So, being a student of those people, I would personally follow their psak. To say that I can determine which one is ultimately true is really not a fair thing to ask me. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll do about 15 to 20 minutes maximum of questions, just so you have a framework in terms of leaving. I'm going to ask a question. I'll move this in the middle, so if you come forward, and I think what we'll do is we'll take all the questions at one shot, and the board can answer them at one shot.
Okay.
I think that is smoother. Also, ask questions. Don't give a long-winded statement, et cetera, et cetera. And while you're thinking of questions to ask, I just want to wish Rav Tabori and his wife, who's here with them, for the weekend. They have a long weekend. Thanksgiving, they're in the States this year, so the 1 year they're in Thanksgiving, I bring them here to Toronto, where it's not a holiday. But anyway, I want to wish them a mazel tov. They just became grandparents again.
For the eighth time,
a couple of weeks ago in Israel, in Elazar. Their son, who I remember, I won't say some of the things I said to him, but when he was in Toronto, I learned with him a little boy. But now, so I want to wish them a mazel tov. Also, over Shabbos, Rav Tabori will be speaking on Shabbos morning at Or Chaim, for those who live in the area. And before at Shalashutis, they'll be having an extended Shalashutis. They're davening Mincha at 4 o'clock at Clapham Park, and he'll be giving a shir there. So those who live in the area, I just want to announce that. The question I want to ask briefly is, you said that if the government were to, it's not just a mifakeh, but if the government were to give an order that is immoral and illegal and against halacha, you would be number one in line to say we're not allowed to follow it or to listen. So I just want to say, in context, really a historical question. For those who believe that the serving of a woman in the Israeli army is a serious problem of whatever Gilui Arayas and Yeherek V'Yavor, as was said by great Rabbanim, some of the great Gedolim, said that opinion one has to give up one's life. How would you assess, you know, that type of a situation? What does one do there? Etc. So I'll leave that as my question, and I'll put here the mic in the middle, and if you have any questions, please come forward.
Yeah. I want to write down the questions. Thanks. Thank you.
I don't know how to ask this, but you mentioned that the Hezder boys would have a non-religious officer. I didn't think that was possible. I thought they are all in a religious unit.
No.
So,
okay.
Is that because there's not enough religious officers?
I get that.
I would like to understand Rav Shapiro's position a little more. My tendency is towards the position that you, Rav Lichtenberg's, but I would like to try and understand it a little more.
Just as background, I also agree with Rav Soloveitchik, not Rav Aaron, but Rav Yashaber, even though I wasn't a Talmud. But the only place I probably disagree with the Rav Lichtenstein school is, I think it is Pikuach Nefesh at the present juncture and has been for the past while to give it back, and that Oslo was a colossal mistake, even though people had information. That's not the story. started coming to the question I want to ask is, I personally had the opportunity to meet the Prime Minister Sharon when he was in the Ori Miklat, when he was traveling North America speaking out against Oslo. I had the opportunity to spend several private meetings with him at the airport waiting for his plane to depart. At the 3 months after Oslo, he said to me, one has to bite his tongue, but lots of Jewish blood is going to be spilt before we can turn the situation around. He then, in 96, after the first wave of suicide bombings, when I had the opportunity to talk to him, I said, unfortunately enough Jewish blood has been spilled. He went, lots more. There's no doubt in my mind that strategically what he's done has been brilliant, but he let Jewish lives be killed because he thought strategically he had to get Bush on side, other people on side. I don't know if halacha would necessarily say that. Each Jewish life is a world unto its own. Does halacha, will it always be in concert with government's decisions, irrespective of that? I don't believe the fact that people always have information makes them right. I think that history will judge Oslo as a colossal diplomatic blunder, one of the worst ever, and Rabin had all the information. Thank you.
I'll find out what the question is. We'll discuss it. I got it.
Sorry, it just got too complicated. I had a simpler question. Right now, I consider Israel to be in a state of war. I mean, there obviously isn't peace between Syria. There isn't peace with the Palestinians. I guess I was just wondering if you could give us like a little clearer idea from a soldier's point of view when he's actually in a state of war, and obviously if you're in a state of war you can't really stop to pass them. So and when things would be considered quiet enough so you would be able to ask an opinion or go beyond like considering your immediate situation of Kippur Nefesh.
Different questions?
The question I'd like to ask is that it appears that the issues of halacha seem to revolve around whether there is pikuach nefesh involved or not with the giving up of land. And I think what you seem to indicate is that that's really not a halachic issue. It's more so of a question of fact that is determined by the government in terms of whether, in fact, it will result in pikuach nefesh or not. The government that we have in Israel today, by your own admission, is not one of unity, not likely will ever be one of unity. The question is, halachically, the concept of what constitutes the decision of the government. Is it a simple majority? Is it just a vote of one, as we've had before? Is it a substantial unity amongst the people that constitutes, the decision?
A lot of different questions were asked. A lot of them raised some very important issues. I won't be able to answer in length each particular issue. I would like to comment on each one. I'll try to comment on each one. Rabbi Kalman asked about the position of drafting women into the Israeli army. The extreme position would be to say that a woman is not allowed to serve in the Israeli army, and as Rabbi Kalman mentioned, there are people who said it's Yehareg Vayavar. It's rather a person should give up his life, a woman should give up her life rather than be drafted into the Israeli army. Some of those people have gone as far as to say that Shirut L'Umi, which is national service, not even military service, is Yahig Vayafar. In other words, let's translate that into English. Let's put it into a real case. According to those people who really say that this is Yahig Vayafar, they mean to say like this. If I hold a gun to a girl's head and say, you must serve in the hospital of Hadassah under the auspices of a government called the United Israel, with people telling you, you go home every night, you spend 9 to 5, but you don't get paid for it because you're working national service. And if you refuse to do it, I'll shoot you in the head. You're supposed to say, yes, go ahead, shoot. I think that's so idiotic that nobody meant it. I'm speaking as a person who signed the declaration that Shirut Lu'umi is Yehareg Vayavar. Now that sounds very strange. It appeared in the Israeli newspapers 30 years ago, a big statement of rabbis that it's forbidden to serve national service under the penalty of threat of death, and I signed it. To my pride and to Rav Lichtson's credit, when he saw me, he said, "Binyamin, what happened? I know you didn't sign that." I never signed it. They put my name on the list, and they said to me, the black type of what we call Haredim, "Zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav." We're doing you the benefit of putting your name on that. Some of those people that got their name in the paper, that's the last time they'll get their name in the paper until they die. So, I believe to say extreme statements like that are totally worthless. Yehareg v'yavar? Shirut lumi? But I would tell you that I feel very strongly that a woman who says she does not want to go into Shirut lumi, a woman who does not want to go to the army, I think she shouldn't be forced to do it. The government did not say. The government said it's not. If the government told them to go, and they really felt it's usher, I think it's silly to say it's usher. But if you, the gadol really thinks it's usher, it's really forbidden, and there the person is directly involved in avera. It's not the same case that I'm talking about, pulling somebody out of their house. But in that case, where you feel that you're really involved in, if you really feel that way, if you feel that you're going to be corrupt, become corrupted, I really feel bad for that. To those people, do you really feel you'd be corrupted if you're working in a hospital? I really have trouble understanding it. But let's say you do, then if I would be part of that community, I would say yes. There are women who are brought up that way. They're brought up that they can't go out of their house, they can't do anything. You know, have you been to Israel lately? Have you seen Sukkot and Me'er Sharim? We were Sukkot and we walked in Me'er Sharim. So you see a sign, men walk on one side of the street and women walk on the other side of the street during Sukkot. So you notice it? My wife can get together with her friends and tell about the shouting match she had with somebody outside outside of Barala. So what happened is this guy starts scheming my wife, she's standing in the wrong place. Woman that you are, you know, in the wrong place. So my wife gave him the worst curse she could give him. She said, "Your mother was a woman." I have trouble believing it. But I really think it's true. If you really are brought up in that society where it's really us, then I would say you shouldn't go, even if it would be a requirement. If you really feel it's us, I don't think it's true, but if you did feel it's true, I think you would have to give up. The situation of having officers who are not religious is, I'm sorry, that's the facts of life in Israel. The mefakdim of the hezdernikim are generally not religious. Generally, they try to have people who are sympathetic and understanding, but the overwhelming majority of the officers in Israel are not religious. And the soldiers, therefore, are faced with all kinds of issues that people mean well for them, even if they mean well. Now I've been more experienced. I've been there for many years. When I first came to the army, to the yeshiva, I didn't know the vocabulary. You have to learn a whole vocabulary of being in the army, of words. So I remember one time I came to an army base, and to speak to the students, the ramim, the rabbanim, go on regular trips to visit the soldiers. So and sometimes the officers want to meet you when you come. So I remember one of the first times I was there, the guy comes to me. First of all, he saw a man with a beard. "It's Amital." So he thought, "Are you Rav Amital?" So I said, no, I'm only me. So he said to me, "Achever shochav dorshim madasim. You're telling me they demand madasim." I don't know what madasim are. So what are the madasim? I don't know what he's talking about. So he said to me, "Ma, lo yacholet madatziyot." I didn't know what he's talking about. So I said, "Ani avdok tanyan." I put in my real voice of, "Ani avdok tanyan." So I told him, "I'll check it out." I went to the guy. He said, "What are madatzim?" Madatsim a madrichei sport. The guys in the army have some physical exercise. So they run. So they could have two types of people running with them. They could have boys, madatsim. They could have girls, madatsiyot. Madatsiyot wear shorts and wear halter tops and run with the guys. Some of the guys felt uncomfortable, so they asked for madatsim. Now, these issues come up all the time in the army. It could be worse. Do you know Israeli politics? Do you know that in the army right now, the past 2 years, there's been a major, major issue under discussion to allow women into the same battle units as men? Women are insisting that they be soldiers, not teachers and not, you know, women soldiers, but fighters. And they want to fight together with the guys. So, do you know what it's like to live in a tank? Three men and a woman in the same tank. You live in the tank. You can imagine what the tznius of the tank would be, what the situation would be. And this is something that we had to come to grips with. We had to fight within the Israeli army. And this was a real threat to the whole Esther. And halavai, we should have a religious army. But we don't. Netzach? Nachal. Nachal Haredi, yeah. There is a Nachal Haredi. And the Nachal Haredi, they do try. That's a special unit of Haredim. And there they definitely try to have religious mafakim. That's true. Not in the regular Hezder army. But in the Nachal Haredi, they have religious soldiers. Some of the religious soldiers are my students. When they have religious mafakim, they're mafakim that don't come from the Nachal Haredi yet. Maybe one day they will. But right now they're coming from the groups that of yeshivot and mechinot, and they are the mefakdim. That's true. And there are no women in the units. But that's one group. Also, yeah, you know what they provide for them? I mean, it's almost, they have a mikveh that they can go to in the morning. They get up in the morning, get a mikveh. Yeah, you know. All right, but anyway, I'm sorry, but the irreligious mefakdim are a fact of life in Israel. Rabbi Avraham, as I said before, he's a great Talmid Chacham. He says black and white. He said he is convinced that Eretz Yisrael, he says, Eretz Yisrael is Yehareg V'Yavor, it's better to die than give up one inch of Israel. I didn't even discuss the other issue. Is Gaza giving up Eretz Yisrael at all? Is Gaza really Eretz Yisrael? I didn't discuss that issue at all. Rabbi Avraham insists that it's Eretz Yisrael, and you're not allowed to give back one inch of Eretz Yisrael, and it's Yehareg V'Yavor, and he also claims that it will not undermine the Israeli army at all. He thinks that nothing, no ramification that I mentioned will come out at all. Everything will come out Jim Dandy at the end. There won't be any problem with the Mifakdim. There won't be any problem with this. He guaranteed it. As much as I can, that's the position of Rabbi Avraham Shapiro. It would be very difficult for me to try to explain more and more his position when I find it a very difficult position to defend. The gentleman who asked the question about his own experiences in Oslo and meeting people from Oslo, the truth is that's a major issue. But ultimately, who decides? Who decides what's pikuach nefesh? That's why I tried to say before, we can all make mistakes. Doctors make mistakes too. But yet, when the question comes up in medical situation, who decides pikuach nefesh, you have to go to the experts. You have to assume that they know. And we have to ask the doctors. The doctors in this case would be the people who have the best information. And I'm not a fan of Oslo either. And if you know where I live and where my background is, I'm not a fan of anything to do with giving up parts of Eretz Israel at all. But I do feel that the government is the one that has to make this decision. I assume that they know more and understand better. It's true they can also make mistakes. The question of Jewish blood being spilt, I mean, the more you live in Israel and the more you know people, that's, of course, the tragedy that affects our lives tremendously. It's really terrible. Unfortunately, where I live, I don't even know how many families have someone who fell, was murdered, and one Jewish life is an olam male, is a complete world. And it's true that certain decisions might cause loss of life. And the question would be, today is a question of loss of life in the longer, in the larger picture, to see the future. What is the best way to save lives in the future? I cry. I think somehow, even this year that I'm in America, I don't think I cry as much as I did in Israel. I read the same news, but somehow I'm not as affected as when you're living there in Israel and you hear it 20 times a day and you watch the television 20 times and you see the same picture over and over and over again, and then you visit the families and you hear the names, and somehow you're so much more affected. And every neshama, every person, is a real personal tragedy. It's one of the beautiful things about Israel, that it's a personal tragedy. Everybody feels it. But you have to try to look at the larger picture. I mean, it's a terrible, and I don't mean to be callous, but if 10 people die today, but and if they didn't die today, 1,000 people will die in the next 2 years. How do you decide? What do you decide? That's a very good halachic issue. You have to give a whole shiur about that. If 10 people will die within the next week, but you're going to save 1,000 people in the future. And how will they die? You'll die, then you'll kill them, or somebody else will kill them. You'll be putting them in danger. That's a very serious issue. What are you supposed to do under those circumstances? How do you determine? That's a very serious issue. I think it's a real halachic issue that I'm not going to even pretend to discuss in a minute or two. But it's a very serious issue. But I think that the larger picture of Pikuach Nefesh might very well mean, I don't like to say the words, right? But the larger issue of Pikuach Nefesh might be to save the rabbin over a long period of time. Makes a lot of sense over the individual yachid now, but it's a terrible thing to do, especially when you're involved with the life of that particular yachid. If it were my son, my brother, my friend, it's a very difficult issue. Yes, we're in a state of war. I believe that's true. Israeli soldier in a state of war sometimes has questions that he doesn't have time to ask anyone. When you have time to ask a question, it's already better. Sometimes he doesn't have questions. And sometimes he has a real issue. Should I shoot or not shoot? A real issue. As I tried to give an example before, I once told Rav Lichtenstein that I would give a student smicha. Student who is faced with an issue. He thinks his life is in danger. He's not 100% sure his life is in danger. And this fellow knows very well that if he shoots, he might very well be court-martialed and go to jail eventually. And he's worried about the ramifications of shooting because he'll go to jail. I told Rav Lichtenstein that I would give him smicha. He looked at me, what are you talking about? I said, does anybody know what smicha is? What are the words for smicha? Yore, yore, and then the better smicha is yadin, yadin. So I said, I would tell him, yore, yore, and later on, yadin, yadin. I would not tell him, hold your fire because you might be court-martialed. If you think your life is in danger, under those circumstances, I told them to shoot. If there'll be a court-martial, I'd rather have you court-martialed than alive, than dead and innocent. But it's true, there's such issues, there's such questions. I'm telling you, Baruch Hashem, Am Yisrael never, never had these issues. And therefore, there are serious issues that we have to come to grips with. Israel, that's one of the reasons that it's fun to be involved in the world of Torah in Israel, because we're in the cutting edge of new halachic areas, both in the world of military, both in the world of police, in the world of technology, that are really just fantastic. But it's true, the issue comes up very much. And I claim when you think you're involved in a case of Pikuach Nefesh, you have to react accordingly. The last question was really a government today in Israel where it's a complicated government, where you have different factions within the government. Does one person decide or does the government decide? The question is a legal issue. Who is the person or the group empowered to make a decision? Israeli law. Israeli law tells us under the situation who is the one and who have the rights to make this decision. The legally appointed people, according to legal status of the country of Israel, the people that have this right to make this decision. If I would go further, I could say, based on a Radvaz, based on the Tshuva of Rav Kook, that it could be, halachically speaking, that the people who are empowered by the people to render these decisions have the position of being Melech Israel. The Radvaz says, it's very well known, Rav Kook wrote an old Tshuva about it, that a Melech need not necessarily be a king, what we call a monarchy. The concept of a Melech in Jewish law might be the legal appointed leader of the Jewish people. In the case of democracy, the ones who are entitled to make this decision. Some people refer to the government as Malchut Yisrael. If you remember, we're in the middle of the month of Kislev already. And if you remember, the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah talks about the Chashmonaim, and it's a whole debate whether the Chashmonaim who restored monarchy, whether they really did good or bad. Just to briefly go mention the topic, the Ramban in Chumash says they did a terrible thing, which I won't go into now. The Rambam, however, points it out as a positive thing. The Rambam says, Chazra Malchut Yisrael Yotem Matayim Shema. The Rambam says, Israel became again a monarchy for over 200 years. And he seems to praise the Chashmonaim for putting up an Israeli government at a monarchy. The fact that we have a government, the fact that for the first time in a long, long time, Israel has its own power of making decisions, its own government, elected by the people in a democratic fashion, means that those people have the right to make the decision. When there is a complicated government with different parties being part of the government, there's a due process in Israeli law. And the people that follow those due process and decide according to Israeli law, and if they decide not according to Israeli law, they will get caught by the Attorney General and they will reestablish what the law is. So those, I think, are the people that have the right to make the decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Really a pleasure to hear a sensitive topic. It's really always a pleasure to have you and to learn from you. And I really think it is very important. I live in Toronto, and it's very hard for me on a personal level to feel what's going on in Israel. And I know it's a weakness, but it's very hard. I'm human. I live here. And when you're 7,000 miles away, and at least if we can hear a shiur from someone who's living in Har Etzion, who served in the army, his children were in the army, it brings it closer. And to hear it in the clarity and the way, I think it's a pleasure. And let us all hope that we'll have peace in the future, and they can all be off theoretical questions only in the Beit Midrash, and we should all be in the Sefer, all being able to learn. Have a good evening. We hope to see you a week from Sunday in our conference on the Rambam. There are refreshments here, and have a good Shabbos.